Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
We would be in the middle of a fight, and I would just be quiet. And so she's sitting on the bed, I'm sitting on the couch, and she looks at me. And normally, she would say, we got to talk about this, we got to talk.
This is Focus on the Family Minute, and Dr. Marcus Warner recalls a conflict with his wife.
And this time, she looked at me and she said, is it okay if I come and sit next to you? And I just shrugged my shoulders because I was not talking. And she sat next to me, and then she looked at me and she said, is it okay if I hold your hand? And I looked at her, I said, you're really not good at this fighting this stuff, are you? And I said, okay, you can hold my hand. And as soon as she did, it was like I could just feel this whoosh inside of, okay, all of a sudden this on-off switch popped back on. My relational circuits came back on. And all of a sudden I realized I like this person. I want to have a kind conversation with this person. And we could talk about our problem now relationally.
Hear more from Dr. Warner at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
Ted Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be done. And giving you service that's second to none.
Driven to be the best.
Ted Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best!
Ted Miles Motors, Atascadero.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location, Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online, DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. My guest today is Jackson Reese of the California Policy Institute. We are going to be talking about California unions. He follows California union membership very closely, works a lot with people who want to leave their public employee union. So if you are in that position and are also thinking of something similar, you'll be interested to hear what he has to say. But first, some other news. And I know that with the election just around the corner, it's very difficult to focus on anything beyond the election. But that also means it's very easy to bury news that we all need to know. And that seems to be what our favorite agency, the California Air Resources Board, is counting on. So the Air Resources Board, which is colloquially known as CARB, is set to vote on something called the Low Carbon Fuel Standard Program just after the election. So this program deals with lowering carbon emissions and fuel. It is what it sounds like. And it has already been responsible for making our gas more expensive, according to analysts who say that the program accounts for about 27 cents of the per gallon price of gas in the state. Last week, as you may have seen, Gavin Newsom and the California Democratic supermajority in the legislature passed a new law to authorize the Energy Commission to put storage mandates on oil refineries. And that mandate is predicted by the Energy Commission itself to hike gas costs again, even though it was this law was supposed to do the opposite. It's one of Newsom's typical moves to do something splashy and showy and talk big against big oil and slap down a mandate and say that this will fix the gas problem, the gas price problem. Even though oil and gas workers begged the governor to lay off, and the Arizona Democratic governor and Nevada's governor both said this would raise prices for the gas prices for them as well. So that just shows you people aren't very optimistic that this is actually going to lower prices. But I only say that because of the context of this upcoming vote from CARB. So CARB is going to vote on this carbon offset program adjustment just after the election, as I said. Last year, the agency released an analysis, which wasn't noticed right away. It took months before it was really reported that the agency was planning this update for the program, and it was going to raise our gas prices by nearly 50 cents per gallon, just starting this coming January, 2025. And then next year, 2026, it was going to add another 50 cents or so. So within a year, January to January, raise gas prices by another dollar. Obviously, California already has the highest of the nation gas prices. This is a very big deal. Lawmakers in Sacramento have not been talking about this, nor has Governor Newsom. So anyway, this vote is upcoming. The Los Angeles Times reminded everyone that this vote was coming. And I asked CARB a few weeks ago, because they had told the LA Times that there is no updated, there was no estimated cost for this new fuel standard that they're projecting, because they had already walked back their other analysis saying that it was going to be about 50 cents per gallon, 47 cents per gallon. Anyway, they responded to me saying, well, we don't set gas prices, and, you know, there is no analysis. There is no projection. I answered that, of course, I know that CARB does not set gas prices, but pointed out that their regulations do affect gas prices. And I added that taxpayers deserve to know what they're going to get out of the agency that they themselves fund, and they deserve to know what more they may have to pay at the pump. I did not hear back. Meanwhile, there is a very intrepid reporter in Sacramento, Ashley Zavala, with KTLA. She's really been hounding CARB on this and tweeting every time she asks for an interview and is ignored, and calling them out for flip-flopping. And she even asked Newsom about this at a press conference, and he said something about wanting more transparency. Notably, he has appointed most of the officials on the CARB board. So pointing that out. Finally, I think it was today, California State Senator Mark Stern replied to Ashley on Twitter saying nothing to see here. Any worry about higher gas prices from this carbon offset program is believing big oil propaganda, and big oil has spent lots of money. And he said he would be happy to talk because he is the Senate's appointee to CARB. So Ashley responded to him that she would set up a time to talk. So we'll see what comes out of that. He was very testy about the idea of challenging the program. And Ashley said, I'm not even challenging the program. I just think that people should know what this new regulation update is going to cost Californians. Anyway, this week on the 24th, CARB is going to have a meeting with a public comment section. The meeting is not about the fuel program. That's going to happen after the election on November 9th, I believe. But the public comment portion of that public meeting does offer a chance for people to call in and air their grievances. So that is one way people can make their thoughts known. And one thing that's very interesting, because I've talked to longtime Sacramento people, and CARB has just been very powerful for a long time. Their unaccountability to the public has been kind of assured for them since Pete Wilson days in the early 90s. This is nothing new. They're very entrenched. They kind of ignore dictates from the legislature that they have to put costs on all of their policies, such as their ban on buying new gas cars that's supposed to take effect in the next decade. So they kind of are immune to any oversight. And one thing that was interesting about this particular kerfuffle is California Democrats seem to be really feeling the heat over gas prices. It's a major issue in congressional races, for example. And the head of the Senate, who's a Democrat, Mike McGuire, told Ashley that he reminded the public that the legislature controls the budget for CARB and has certain strings they can pull to push for more transparency. So that is a sign that there is enough heat. I don't know what kind of difference it would make on changing how CARB operates, but it is probably a good time to voice your opinion about all this if you have the time. So as I said, the 24th is the CARB meeting, and there is always the option of calling our representative, State Senator John Laird, State Assemblywoman Don Addis, and even county supervisors. So putting that bug in your ear. Next up, I do want to discuss hopefully two stories from California that have to do with Vice President Kamala Harris and who she is. May just have time for the one. But I do believe that these are good stories to kind of show her character as an elected official. And the first is a spotlight on an up-and-coming state politician who is worth looking at. In light of Harris's aggressive tack to the center as she tries to appeal to independent voters and the general electorate, this person is named Latifah Simon, and she is actually running to replace Congresswoman Barbara Lee to represent Oakland. I first noticed her because she ran the interview circuit after Biden was replaced with Harris, called up by reporters because she calls Harris her mentor. She's a longtime Harris protege, and she also happens to be an early proponent of the defund police movement in California. And one of the reasons this movement really got off the ground here particularly in the Bay Area, because she was chosen by two of the state's top funders of Prop 47, of George Gascon, and of progressive prosecution in general in the state, as well as defund the police nonprofits. And she's just very well known for this in Oakland, is what I found. So Harris does not really speak of Simon anymore. And it's not in public, but rather in public fundraisers, like in a San Francisco soiree she held in August, where she went off script in a place where cameras were not allowed, to thank Newsom, Simon, and other California officials. But when she first ran for president in 2019, Harris maintained close and public ties to Simon for a time period spanning 20 years. Harris was credited by Simon for pushing her to finish college. She gave her her first government job. She introduced her to her late husband, officiated their wedding, and eulogized Simon's husband at his funeral. She also campaigned for Simon's first successful political race for the board of directors at BART in the Bay Area. That's the public transit system, which is kind of famous right now, or notorious for being dangerous to ride. Lots of crime happens on BART. And BART is where Simon actually would try to defund the police by $2 million as a director. And that effort failed, but she did try. Simon also spent years working for liberal billionaires, bankrolling efforts of very lax criminal justice reform and anti-police projects. Her most recent job was working for the wife of Netflix founder and billionaire Reed Hastings. She was paid a salary of almost $560,000 a year to direct funds into left-leaning criminal justice causes. She was also chosen. She took a primetime spot at the Democratic convention this summer when Harris was introduced as the Democratic nominee, and she spent the time praising Harris as her mentor, saying she saw her potential, her commitment, and the good work that they could do together. An interviewer with KQED, the public radio station in San Francisco, interviewed Simon and suggested that Harris and Simon's relationship was, quote, a little bit mentor and a little bit family. And Simon replied that Harris is auntie status. She is mentor status. This relationship seems to have become a one-way street as Harris runs for president. And as I said, really tries to appeal to the middle. Simon is not really a middle ground candidate. But Simon herself continues to gush about Harris publicly. And it's interesting looking at her record basically Simon worked for these very wealthy liberal donors. And these groups include these women were the money behind the defund the police movement in Oakland. Critics argue that these reforms that she played such a key role in supporting while working for wealthy progressives sowed the seeds of the Oakland crime wave that is really hurting the city, is leading to the recall of both the mayor. Or a potential recall of both the mayor and the district attorney there. It's caused businesses to shutter, including the first In-N-Out ever to close in California. And Newsom has even sent up backup prosecutors and police this year to Oakland to try to get things back on track. Simon is favored to win the Oakland congressional seat. She's very well funded, as I said, by the progressive billionaires who've really kind of taken over Oakland politics. Her opponent, Jennifer Tran, who is a Democrat and an ethnic studies professor, has lots of progressive credentials, but she's running to the right of Simon on crime, calls her the architect and funder of the national defund the police movement, and adds that everyone can see how much these failed policies are harming our communities. Some of Simon's resume is as program director of the left-wing Rosenberg Foundation, which teamed up with George Soros's Open Societies Foundation and California Progressives to push Prop 47, which we are now trying to repeal parts of it this election. We all know what this one did. It's Harris as Attorney General promised that the Prop 47 would send hundreds of millions of dollars into school truancy prevention and addiction treatment. What we've seen is rampant retail theft and massive drug and homeless problems. From 2016 until 2022, Simon served as president of something called the Akonati Foundation. That's founded by progressive donors Quinn Delaney and Wayne Jordan. They're big figures in Democratic politics nationally, but they're also big figures in the Bay Area. And that foundation and the efforts that they funded, or Simon helped fund through them, was to remove police from Oakland schools and fund other anti-incarceration, anti-law enforcement endeavors. She collected about $2 million in salary over her time there, according to tax filings. And Jordan Delaney, not surprisingly, are massive Harris donors. They gave $1.5 million to Harris's campaign in May and June before she became the Democratic presidential nominee. And they are also major backers of Simon's congressional campaign. Among the groups that Simon funneled money to as the head of this foundation were the Anti-Police Terror Project, which advocates for police abolition, and reportedly also has enriched family and friends of the founders of that group. She's also directed funds to major left-wing dark money powerhouses, like the New Venture Fund and the Tides Foundation. You probably haven't heard of those, but they're backed by the Tides Foundation is backed by George Soros, and it's responsible for funding a lot of big progressive causes in California. Simon then left the Akonati Foundation in 2022, and she leads the donor advice fund of Netflix CEO Reed Hastings' wife, Patty Quillen, who also gave $1.5 million to elect District Attorney George Gascon in Los Angeles, who is probably going to be defeated because Angelenos are very fed up with crime there. He's done quite a bit of damage there. And Quillen paid Simon nearly $742,000 in salary over a year and a half, according to her campaign disclosures. So that is Harris's mentee and honorary niece, according to Latifah Simon. Anyway, we will take a quick break for these messages from our sponsors, and I will be back with Jackson Reese. Stay with us.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Rigotti. With just over 2 weeks to go before Election Day, Donald Trump campaigns in hurricane-ravaged western North Carolina. Fox's Bill Malugin reports.
He visited with state and local officials while he was out there. He surveyed some of the damage, and he expressed amazement at the early voting numbers out here in North Carolina. Despite all that storm damage, according to the Associated Press, about 1 million ballots have already been cast.
Kamala Harris is stumping with former Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Fighting intensifies in the Middle East with Israel and Hezbollah exchanging fire.
Israel launched a series of airstrikes against Hezbollah-linked banks across Lebanon. Smoke could be seen rising from the capital of Beirut, specifically in the Dahya neighborhood, a Hezbollah stronghold.
That's Fox's Trey Yingst reporting from Haifa, Israel. America's listening to Fox News.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company has the parts and expertise to repair any overhead door. From replacing weather stripping or garage door spring repair to programming garage door openers, their service teams are available for prompt dispatch to your home or business. Quality products and superior service. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hey, this is Maddie Work, a proud fifth generation of the Work Family Ranch. I invite you to get outside and enjoy God's beauty from the back of a trusty ranch horse. With deep roots in North County and over 25 years in ag tourism, we offer down-to-earth fun for the whole family. You might be wondering, how can we promise you a trusty ranch horse? Well, would you ride the same horses that have been serving our nation's warriors in the Mighty Oaks Legacy Program for over 10 years? I sure would. Come ride with us and experience the work thing we offer. Call 805-610-0961 or workranch.com.
Hi, welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and joining me now from Sacramento is Jackson Reese. How are you, Jackson?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Are you joining us from Sacramento or from elsewhere? I can't remember.
I'm in Santa Ana right now.
Oh, Santa Ana.
It's a little south.
Yes. Very, very far south. Well, thanks so much for joining. And I introduced you as someone who's very knowledgeable about California's unions and their workings. We first connected when I wrote a story that California's arguably most powerful union, certainly their biggest spending union, the California Teachers Association, was inflating its membership numbers. The union routinely claims about 310,000 members, and I had obtained a document, an internal document, that put the number of dues-paying members at just 266, well, almost 267,000, but definitely, more than 40,000 members fewer than they publicize. So can you tell me, you follow the ins and outs of California unions very closely. Why does this discrepancy between their public and their internal numbers matter?
Yeah, I think one of the big things here is that unions really have no interest in being on the losing side of things. So if they have a position where they're telling their members that people are giving up and leaving or that they're not seeing value, it's a bad look for them, and it actually drives more people to opt out and leave their union. So publicly, unions come out and they'll talk about how their membership is staying airtight, but what we see across the state with virtually every local and all the statewide unions is that while budgets grow, while COVID money comes into our public agencies and actually expands the amount of people that could be represented, people are still choosing to leave. So it's kind of a double whammy for unions that could and should be in their best few years ever. There's just more government employees today than ever before that are eligible for union membership. But they're not. We see them continuing to leave and continuing to choose for themselves that it's better each year for me to actually keep that money rather than continue to contribute to a union that's not doing a lot for me today.
That's really fascinating because, as you said, our agencies are just bloating. I think the numbers were just crazy. Gavin Newsom was boasting that California had really robust hiring new job numbers. And it turned out that, 90-some percent of those jobs were just government jobs. So the taxpayer-funded roles are increasing, but the private sector is not. So why are these union members leaving? You mentioned that the benefit isn't there, but all these unions are, some serve different political roles, obviously, but let's focus on the teachers union. Why would people leave the CTA?
Yeah, so I work with a lot of teachers personally, actually, and help them get out of the union. Our organization at California Policy Center actually helps people navigate and choose what's best for them and their family. It helps them get out of unions they don't want to be paying into. Back in 2018, the option was actually given for people to leave. Before then, unions would tell you that you could essentially choose to not spend a portion of your dues on politics, but you still had to pay the vast majority of them. And it wasn't an option at all for a public employee to get out. And so one of the things we're seeing recently is that the actual option's just been given, which starts these conversations between teachers about, well, is this the best option now that it exists? So in a lot of cases, if you take the young teacher who's just gotten out of school, they're young, they're hungry, and what do they see? They're probably, in many cases, disappointed by the fact that lots of the teachers that have tenure maybe are not as excited about teaching, but continue to be just defended by the unions, or they see only bad teachers being defended by the unions. And a lot of teachers that I've talked to have said, well, this is pretty deflating knowing that my union membership dollars are actually going to defend a union that is really just protecting the bad teachers. They're not really in it for me. At the same time, they're looking at their alternatives and saying, well, I may be able to save about $1,000 a year by leaving my union. And if I put that into a Roth IRA, if I put that into a 401k, if I actually contributed that to the market, or even better to my family or create an experience out of that. It just could be used better. And so we have people that are making financial decisions and deciding to put that aside and using it as a retirement nest egg and project to retire nearly a millionaire just off of those dues that are no longer coming out of their paycheck. And others that are saying, I can afford new experiences, more Christmas gifts for my kids, more opportunities. I have one teacher I talked to a few weeks ago who takes his son down to Baja, Mexico to go surfing now. And this is the money that he takes him to do that multiple times a year to go down on that vacation. And he credits opting out of the union with giving him the opportunity to connect with his son that way. So we see a lot of people really just making the decision that's best for them and their family. And it really has come down to your union membership is now a service that is kind of compared against other market services, and it doesn't measure up. The union's not doing a lot for good teachers.
So what kind of money are we talking about? What's the most expensive union to belong to, I guess, first in California?
Yeah, so the most expensive are going to be your public safety unions, your cops, your firefighters, your prison guards. These are unions that have really strong senses of brotherhood and togetherness. They're going to charge a lot more, and they can get away with it in the way that SEIU or other more like administrative staff may not be able to. And there's a variety of reasons for that, where a lot of these kind of public safety unions are actually, you have firefighters that are sleeping in bunk beds next to each other that are going, you might be literally sleeping right next to your union rep a lot of times, whereas a lot of the city reps that we talked to, a lot of people that are working administrative jobs or engaged in some of these larger unions are more spread out, and they may have never actually met somebody who's even engaged in their union other than the day that they signed up to be employed. So there's a piece of that that kind of factors into the expense portion of this. And the other piece of it, too, is just where people line up on the pay scale. Your public safety employees are going to be a lot better paid, and the portion that they're then going to be able to get away with taking out of their public employee's paycheck to actually spend on the union activities is going to be more. And in other cases, you're not going to see as much. But if you're a teacher involved in California Teachers Association, that's about a thousand bucks a year that you're spending on your membership.
And what does that buy you?
In most cases, it buys you a liability insurance package that you could obtain for about $9 a month rather than the hundred and something you're charged. So on top of that, a lot of political activity. And you really get that 1-2 punch of funding the progressive movement plus a little bit of an insurance buy-in at the same time.
It's fascinating. The CTA, and I'm not sure how long they've been doing this, but certainly recently, they have been teaming up with Planned Parenthood and Equality California and pretty much all the really progressive pro-gender ideology laws passing out of the legislature. But then they also get into public safety. They get into all kinds of stuff. So they just gave $175,000 to the effort to defeat the ballot initiative to repeal parts of Prop 47. And their political checks are always really big. So how much they give their members kind of breakdowns of what they spend on political activity. Are those snapshots accurate? And how do they break it down for their members? What do they disclose about their spending?
Yeah, so this is a piece that I love because it's a level of ignorance that they expect from their members to give them a breakdown that says this tiny bit was used for politics and the rest totally isn't. It's used for supporting you. When you actually look at the money, we need to break it down as hard campaign contribution dollars, which is dollars that are literally handed to a candidate or a cause, and then dollars that they use outside of that on politics. And so they're operating in two ways. Usually when they give a receipt to a member and they say, we've spent this much on politics, what they're actually saying is, this is how much we have handed to a politician directly. Everything else, all the other political things they do, the lawsuits that they wage and the lobbyists that they hire and the organizers they hire and the lit that they're dropping at doors, like right before Election Day, all of that's not included in that number that they distribute. So the Supreme Court actually said in a case about 6 years ago Justice Alito writes, everything that a union does is innately political, that each dollar is spent. You can't actually break it down. That breakdown is purely for campaign finance reasons and purely so that the FPPC and the FEC know that this many dollars were shipped to, from California teachers to that Georgia Senate race, or this many dollars were shipped from California public employees that are associated with cities that we all live in, and that we would think are returned to representatives' employees, but they're actually shipped to a Pennsylvania Senate race. And it's for keeping track of the actual hard dollars moving. It's not actually for a breakdown of how much is spent on politics. And so at the end of the day, the Supreme Court says all of it's politics. It doesn't matter how many attorneys you hire or how many of these dollars just go in the form of a check or in the form of a door knocker. In both cases, that counts as politics, and this organization can't get away from that.
So how much do the people who come to you and want to drop out, how much do they bring up the politics and the political giving versus just how much of their paycheck has to go to these union activities? Is there any resentfulness? I mean, I would resent if even if I believed wholeheartedly in the political causes. I mean, to have so much of your paycheck essentially go to politics just seems, I don't know, it would ruffle me, I think. I don't know about other people, but do you hear complaints about this?
Yeah, so all the time, but it's not the primary reason, which is really interesting, because depending on who we're talking to, you're going to have different motivators for making the same decision. And the hard thing is, I think unions could step in and offer some really good things to their members, but it would mean they have to step away from politics and spend that money elsewhere, and they're just not doing it. So the number one reason we see is purely that $1,000 a year is better in my wallet than in another person's wallet. And if I can keep that for my family, if I can keep that for my life, it's so much better than anybody else that I could hand that to. And so whether you're young or old, like the public employees that we get, the number one reason is $1,000 a year is better than not having $1,000 a year. On top of that, there are people that opt out for political reasons. We have a lot of people right when the Janus decision came down. That's the decision that allowed for public employees to actually make this choice. As that decision comes down, a lot of people decide they're going to move on from their unions because of political reasons. And a lot of political groups were able to either say, yes, you should move on, or no, you shouldn't, really loudly. So is this conversation happening among a lot of the more politicized members of the unions? The funny thing that we saw in California with so many of our public employees being progressives is that a lot actually left because their unions were not as progressive as they wanted them to be. That as unions decided to endorse Hillary Clinton back in 2020, we had people flooding through our website, coming to our organization saying, get me out. I can't believe they didn't endorse Bernie. And that was their reason for leaving. And at the same time, we had, as the unions endorsed Hillary Clinton, we had people coming to us saying, well, we're Republicans. We'd like out too. And from both sides of the political aisle, you had people that were dissatisfied with this establishment organization that continued to, without question, siphon money out of their paychecks. So there's many reasons that people opt out. Sometimes they think the union is too far right. Sometimes it's that they think it's too far left. At the end of the day, it's because they want to keep that money in their pocket. And even some, it's funny, I was talking to one teacher the other day who said, I love politics, but I want to contribute them towards my people. And she'll end up spending the money on politicians that she wants to support rather than giving it to somebody else to dole it out.
Huh. So is it fair to say that the attrition has kind of been across the board, all the unions, or are the unions you mentioned, like the public safety, the firefighters, are those still pretty strong just considering the different culture there?
Yeah, I think the culture there creates a really strong like brotherhood and connection between members in those unions. The union is very integrated with the employee's life as an employee in those settings. So police officers, your police union is going to be very integrated with your actual job. When it comes to some of these other areas, especially during COVID and talking about your local teachers union became a conversation that was normal around the dinner table a lot of teachers decided this is just not that important to me, and they decided to leave. And so we're seeing far more attrition of teachers rather than cops or firefighters. At the same time, in other areas, you have unions that kind of catch a lot of different types of public employees. They don't have a specific niche. So an organization like SEIU or AFSCME, which is the American Federation of School, County, Municipal Employees, they cover a lot of different people in a lot of different expert areas in a lot of different places. And so their average...
We're going to have to stop right there because we're heading into a break, but we'll pick this up on the other side. Stay with us, everyone. I'm speaking with Jackson Reese from the California Policy Center, and you're listening to Free Talk California. We will be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks kicking off the new trading week mixed as bond yields climbed and investors get in gear for a busy week of earnings reports with some major U.S. companies releasing financial results. Most of the 11 S&P 500 sectors finish lower except for tech. Nvidia among the leaders in the tech space today. Its shares rose 4% and powering closer to a new milestone and on track to notch a $3.5 trillion market capitalization, which only Apple has ever surpassed. Boeing stock rising over 3% after the aerospace giant and its machinist union reached a new contract proposal that could end a months-long strike. The Dow winners today, Apple, Boeing, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, Caterpillar, and American Express. The Dow falling 344 points, the NASDAQ up 50, S&P 500 lower by 11. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, Donald Trump Jr. here. I never thought I'd see price fixing as a campaign promise. What's next? Is your 401k or IRA on the left's to-do list? This is why you need to act now and protect your nest egg. I believe gold is the answer. To find out more, get a free info kit from Birch Gold by texting the word SHELTER to the number 989898. Act now to secure your financial future. Text SHELTER to the number 989898 for your free info kit from Birch Gold.
Paid for by Birch Gold Group.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel,
238-3080. Hi, I'm Wesley Dawes with Stove and Spa Center, and it might be hot now, but winter is just around the corner. So Stove and Spa Center is having a huge 36th anniversary stove, insert, and fireplace sale. We're overstocked, so don't miss out on big savings on quality cast wood and gas stoves by Hearthstone. How would you like being warmer this next winter and save money too? It's possible with a gas or wood stove from Hearthstone. Hearthstone's highly efficient wood and gas stoves come in many styles to fit any home's decor. Save big on Hearthstone stoves and inserts during Stove and Spa Center's big sale. All the products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com. Save big on Hearthstone stoves during Stove and Spa Center's 36th anniversary sale going on right now. Don't miss out on all the special offers at Stove and Spa Center. 7485 El Camino Real, Atascadero, between Curbrail and Moore Roads.
Hi, welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and I'm speaking with Jackson Reese from the California Policy Center. One question I have for you, Jackson, is in the past, I've heard, particularly from teachers, that the social pressure is very high to be part of the union. And if you're a teacher who is not part of it, you can get shunned in the lunchroom. You feel people are talking about you. Is that still true, or have the social pressures changed or lightened?
They certainly have lightened a little bit across the board, but it's one of those things that we just can't control is how people treat each other when they make decisions about politics. And I think one of the things that we see a lot is that people get very heated about politics, especially when it's attached to you. And so if a union's told you that without them, you're out of a job, without them, there's no promotions or no pay raises, a lot of teachers can take that pretty personally. And so we see, especially in the teaching context where you're all sharing the same lunchroom, there's not many more dangerous places for the employee who wants to opt out, especially who wants to do it publicly. And so we see in a lot of cases people needing to opt out either in groups or wanting to do it quietly when it comes to teachers. But frankly, we're not actually seeing it dissuade a lot of people that really want to get out from getting out. Well, it's anecdotal, about 30%, or this piece is not anecdotal. We hear anecdotal evidence that people are really, really struggling with the bullying and the pressure from unions. And it might be a reason that certain individuals don't want to leave, but it hasn't stopped about 30% of the public employees in this state from leaving their unions. That's about 400,000 people at this point that have, in the last 6 years, said, I'm really done paying into this system. And so in teachers' context, a lot of them are deciding to do it really quietly. They're not actually choosing not to leave.
Huh. So is this a generational divide as well? You know, you hear it, and I don't mean to keep harping on the teachers, but, you know, a lot of what you hear from parents who are frustrated with how the union is working is protecting, you know, longtime subpar teachers, and kind of the more seniority, the more protection they have, which kind of indicates, you know, kind of an older generation. But then you also have very kind of young activist types who are also heading up unions. But is there kind of a generational divide? Are you seeing more younger, more older leave? Or is there not enough evidence to show one picture or another?
You know, from my perspective and at this point, thousands of people that I've talked to on this very issue, I'd say there is one. But it's more about why people are leaving than it is about them choosing to leave at all. So younger teachers have more of a return to leave and choose to invest that money. If you're near the end of your career, thinking about investing that into a retirement account is going to be less of an impressive number. Like, the outcome's just going to be a little bit diminished than if you're brand new on the job. You've also, if you're older, have the flip side where you've seen the union defend a lot of really bad teachers before. And so you may be really disenchanted, and that's actually the reason that you're driving to leave. The opportunity for you to no longer fund a group that's really been irritating you by only standing up for those that are really not good at their job or really having a lot of troubles at the school, that becomes the driving force. So when we talk to a lot of the younger teachers in California, many of them are using or are reporting that the reason they're opting out is for the money. Like, the union just doesn't give the services that they can afford. And at the same time, the older generation is looking a little bit more at the union's politics, the union's kind of programming or their operation within their schools, and thinking, this is not an organization I really want to be a part of, and leaving for that reason that either is political or is focused on just not wanting to be associated with the organization anymore.
So what does this mean, this attrition mean for the big picture? I found a big Politico story from 2014 titled, I think it was something like The Fall of the Teachers Unions, and they pieced together different evidence that seemed pretty compelling to predict basically the end of teachers unions' influence. This was on the national level, but obviously that didn't turn out to be true because, you know, in 2020 we had the states and the cities where teachers unions were strongest, basically strong arm, and on the national level, once Biden came in, basically strong arm Democrats into keeping schools shuttered. So is that predicted demise just going to happen later down the line, or are we seeing kind of a new era where unions will not be as powerful? They do seem to be pretty strong right now. Politically, even if their numbers are dwindling a little bit in California, where is this all leading?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts here because it's a great question. I think one of the big pieces is that until 2018, it wasn't even an option to stop paying into it. Well, you could be called a non-member. You're still paying the brunt of your union dues at that point. And so there's really only been 6 years in California and a lot of other states that you were even given the option to leave. So that's where we start to see the decline in employment under union membership throughout the state. Now, one thing that I think we'll see pretty soon is we're really talking in the sense of hundreds of millions of dollars, nearly a billion and a half in election cycle that's being poured into politics. The CTA's budget this year, I think, clocks in at about $225 million, and that's just for teachers associated under that umbrella. So you're looking at about 1.5 million public employees all paying into the system. It's going to take a long time for them all to opt out. But we're seeing the effects of that already. If you look at SEIU just about 2 years ago, they're experiencing some of the biggest losses. And there was even a report that came out that shows one of their biggest locals is down just over 50% now, that they're now in the realm of actually representing more non-members than members. And one thing that happened was they elected a new president that said, we need to stop giving to politics because we simply don't have the money to represent our people well and play the political game. And you probably could have guessed what happened. He gets stabbed in the back. A bunch of his powers are removed by the executive board. They literally changed the locks on the union headquarters, and they removed him from office because they decided that this elected SEIU president shouldn't actually be in charge because he came out and said what everybody knows is true. If you spend money on politics, people are going to get ostracized. They're going to leave. And that's not what the organization should be doing if it wants to retain membership. So I think when you're talking about numbers this big, these hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, it may feel like not a lot's happening. But at the end of the day, we're seeing that less money is being poured into the progressive system today than it was 6 years ago. And it's because all these members are choosing to leave. Now, one of the places I think you'll start seeing the most effect in California is, first, unions will stop shipping as much money to like battleground fights in other states. And just like on the conservative side, on the progressive side, California has become the ATM for the rest of the nation, where unions here produce the cash to fund races all across the U.S. and then use that to then negotiate against politicians they got elected once in office. And so you'll see that number start to go down. You'll also see at your local level, your local unions are going to get less and less and less to spend on politics in your local districts, because so much has to be shipped up to the state level and up to the national level to help fund these races across the country. And so I think that's where you're going to start seeing the first kind of bits and pieces of unions saying, we actually can't run this candidate for our local school board because we just simply don't have enough to do that, plus support the ballot propositions, plus the legislation and lobbying and all the other pieces combined. And we've actually seen that in districts down in Orange County area. Unions have decided that school board, they're no longer going to take on with the same ferocity they used to. And I think for the first year, the conservatives actually outraised the progressives for those school board seats this last election cycle. And so I'll need to look into the numbers a bit, but it was a pretty phenomenal thing that unions were not pouring the same amount of cash 2 and 4 years ago that they did. Because at the end of the day, they just simply don't have the cash to deploy it everywhere anymore. And so they're going to need to start picking and choosing their battles more and more exclusively.
That's fascinating. And I need to look into that trend. That's a really good story. Really, really quick, because we only have about a minute left, but what do you make of the shift of unions like the Teamsters toward Donald Trump?
Yeah, so there's a lot of unions that are involved in the private sector. And we really are just focused on those representing public employees. Those are the only ones that we're helping out and helping move on. The idea that a union is negotiating against the taxpayer with taxpayer dollars is super inappropriate.
Right.
So there's a lot of private groups that understand he's what's best for their industry. And I totally get that they're coming around to that.
Well, thank you so much, Jackson, for joining me today. And we'll have to talk again. I really want to dive into the money story. That's fascinating. Thanks to all of you for listening today. We will see you next week. Until then, be well.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.